Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Dynamite from the post rest in sight. AEW lighting up the fuse. Sit back and enjoy the bubbly. As we hear from John and Waitay, where we're going, we don't need roads. And if the buck stops here, this thing might blow. Everything you hear, opinions of the show. And if you don't like it, go to the Forbes and let them know.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Rewind to Dynamite. It is John Pollock and Waiting here with you on a Wednesday evening coming out of Dynamite from Chicago. It was very snowy out, but very heated indoors.
Apparently, yeah. Big snow day in Chicago. I've read some schools were even closed, so.
My goodness.
Yeah, wow. Just this. When are we going to? Well, I guess nature's taking care of that, aren't we? Or, I mean, the humans are taking care of this problem. Snow, you know?
Well, you can incorporate it into angles.
Snow? Yeah.
Toss a baby face into the snow. I think it adds to the rivalry when you have thrown a jungle boy into the snow.
Yeah, sure. Or we'll just keep using our cars. We'll keep driving SUVs and it'll be somebody else's problem.
Okay, well, that's an alternative. Yes, you are right. I think we're supposed to get snow tomorrow. I believe it's actually started.
Yeah, I think a lot of it. It's probably making its way over here in Chicago. Great.
I got to go out tomorrow. This could be an issue.
Well, good luck. Best of luck.
All right. This is a riveting conversation, but we're going to move on to chat about tonight's show. But we start with everything today surrounding Brian Kendrick, because that was the focus of the day. And led to his removal from tonight's card. So on Tuesday, they had announced that Brian Kendrick was going to be taking on Jon Moxley on tonight's show. It would have been Kendrick's AEW debut. And during the day, a variety of comments surfaced from interviews that Kendrick had done back in 2011 with this outlet called The Truth Is Scary, and then a High Spots interview he did in 2013. So I think everyone is probably familiar with Brian Kendrick and his conspiratorial mindset, but I'll just say for myself, like, I will plead ignorance. I was not aware of the severity of the comments, because the ones that were focused upon were just these horrific comments about the Holocaust and the murders at Sandy Hook Elementary School back in 2012, and you know, it was, I wrote about it in the update today. And then about an hour before the show, Tony Khan announced that the comments were abhorrent and offensive. And Brian Kendrick was off the show with Wheeler Yuta taking his spot. And Brian Kendrick has since come out. He actually posted these around 9 p.m. Eastern time, stating, "I apologize for all the hurt and embarrassment I have caused with my words. These are not my beliefs and never were beliefs of mine. And I crossed the line. I spread the most vile comments without thinking of the damage it would cause. I will live with this regret for the rest of my life. I'm truly sorry for the pain I have caused." And yeah, this was one where I won't say I was shocked that he was removed from the show, but you know, the fact that an hour beforehand this statement gets put out, you know, it was, I don't know how many promoters would make that move so close to a show that they felt this was enough, that we are not going to put this guy on our television program that starts, I mean, I don't know when they first were made aware of the comments, but not a whole lot of time before they were going live tonight.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I did the update with Andrew this afternoon at 1 o'clock Eastern time before I think any of this at least hit my attention. And it seemed like, you know, we were talking about, wow, what a crazy 24 hours for Brian Kendrick. You know, he it was announced he was released and then all of a sudden announced for AEW Dynamite. And we were really excited about Brian Kendrick's debut in AEW, taking on John Moxley, probably, you know, being attached to this Bryan Danielson storyline. And then everything started to come out throughout the evening, and I started to feel kind of shitty about my anticipation for it all. And, you know, as more information came out, it kind of became a lot more than just, you know, we've kind of known, like, I think we all might know one of these, like, you know, like people who believe in crazy conspiracy theories. But when it came to his views or, you know, previously stated views on Sandy Hook, and then like the comments just that people were digging up just seemed to get worse and worse about the Holocaust denial and everything else. It really became quite inexcusable, and it just really caught fire everywhere on the internet, on Twitter, on Reddit, to the point where I was really wondering, like, what the response was going to be when he came out and actually wrestled that match. And I didn't think that AEW would pull him because I think it was so close. And I think part of me was wondering, well, like, do they consider this big enough, you know, to do something about it? And clearly by the time it got to 7 o'clock or whenever throughout the day, as I'm sure they're discussing this internally, they felt it was big enough and they felt that this was not worth the PR risk. And I have to assume there are plenty of people in the back that are very proud Jewish people that probably had something to say about this as well. And for a guy who's not contracted to the company, who you're essentially doing a big favor for, giving him a big match on your national TV show, I absolutely felt it was the right decision to make.
Yeah, I mean, I applaud them for making the decision. I don't have a whole lot of time for stuff like this. To me, it's, you know, there is a you know, the genre of like conspiracy theories. I mean, there's an element of it where it's largely just, you know, ridiculous stuff that is meant for like entertainment purposes. And I think in this age of so much misinformation that is a lot more dangerous territory now. This kind of stuff, like, this is not a censorship issue. This is not a free speech issue. This is just someone putting out some really, really shitty comments and being held accountable. That's what he was. He was held accountable today for these comments that have just skirted under the rug for this many years, because I don't think these were very high profile interviews or that people would be sitting down in great numbers to watch something called the Kendrick Theory on High Spots as he talks for however long it is.
Sure. Yeah. You know, I was really curious to know if Brian Kendrick himself would send out a message before Dynamite, before all of this stuff, you know, before he was reprimanded for it by AEW. The fact that he didn't, I thought spoke a lot. Like, when you don't at least answer the criticism, you're leaving much of the audience to wonder if you're still this person. And we have to remind ourselves, okay, people can change. Yes. You know, these comments were made over, and one of them was made over a decade ago. Another was made in 2013. But we have no idea as an audience what he currently thinks of today. It wasn't until after the show already aired, after he had been taken off of the show, where he denounced his comments in the past. And, you know, if you're him, you're probably recognizing, okay, do I blow this up right now? Like, you know, do I possibly get more attention to it by tweeting it out? And I would say clearly the answer was, yeah, like you apologize for it. And instead of, I think, you know, hoping that people don't find it and having it be skirted under the rug. So, you know, he seems remorseful in the comments, but man, like, the apology, honestly, is not for me to accept. It's for the people, you know, that he has hurt to accept. So, you know, what do you think it means for his future?
It's a question of, you know, if people deem him to be truly remorseful Maybe there will be opportunities. Like, I'm not somebody that believes that, you know, you say something really, really stupid and it's held against you forever. I do believe in forgiveness for people where it is warranted. At the same time, like, there is penance, I think, that are going to be paid. I don't know if I'm going out of my way to reach out to a Brian Kendrick right now after this. He had 10 years that if you put something out into the world like that, you know, he felt no need to correct the record all this time. So there may be a period that people do not want to use him for that very reason. Again, I'm not saying it should be never use this guy again, never book him again, but it's for the time being, like, I don't know. I would not be bending over backwards right now to book a Brian Kendrick if I have other options.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll see what happens. I'm glad he put this out. I'm glad he at least acknowledged it tonight and put that out there so people know what he is thinking. But I was too surprised that he ended up getting pulled just because it was so close to showtime. And let's be honest, we have seen a lot of examples where it's like the strategy is you just, it's a peak of people being angry and criticizing you, and then you just go through it and you just power through and the criticism lessens and lessens. This was not a case where they were just going to, you know, want their fans to hold their nose and go through with this. It was, we do not want to put this on our television. So I applaud them making that decision. It was, you know, on a show day, it would have been very easy to just bury your head in the sand and ignore this.
I want to read a comment in the Zoom chat right now because this is from MJ, who has given me permission to read this. MJ says, as a descendant of survivors, I do not wish to see Kendrick out of wrestling forever as long as he publicly makes a statement. Him losing out on this opportunity was accountability, and I appreciate TK for doing it. Okay. So that's one perspective. And, you know, like, I think this becomes a conversation. It already has been a conversation, but this now becomes a bigger conversation, you know, which I'd love to hear more from, you know, people that are directly affected, by Brian Kendrick's past comments. So, I'm sure there'll be more about this in the days to come.
Yeah. Yeah. I just, it's just horrible things when you put yourself in the mindset of somebody that is actually affected by this, it's terrible. But nonetheless, that was the major story going into tonight's show. They never brought this up on the broadcast, but we were starting off with Jon Moxley and Brian Kendrick's replacement, Wheeler Yuta, who was out.
Do you have any issue with AEW not mentioning this on the broadcast itself? And let me preface that by saying, okay, so they did not announce Kendrick last week. This all seemed to come together very last minute. So if you're strictly watching TNT or TBS and not following all the stuff online, you wouldn't have been aware of it whatsoever. So in that sense, I can understand why they didn't bring it up. But it's very much like the whole, you know, when somebody, what is it, Roppongi Vice, that match was cut because of Rocky Romero's COVID. They just suddenly changed the match with no mention of Rocky's COVID, even though Rocky Romero himself gave us the reason on Twitter. Do you feel like there should be a level of transparency from Dynamite and AEW in this instance?
I didn't look at this story of AEW needing to be accountable for this. I think, like, I don't know however many people were even aware of these comments before today. So I don't really hold this.
Well, I don't hold this against Tony Khan or AEW for booking, because, yeah, very few of us, and a lot of us didn't know. But the fact that they did announce it at least online and then changed the match last minute, should any of that have been brought up?
I just don't know how in that brief time when Wheeler Yuta's walking to the ring that you expect your announcers to have a conversation about what kind of comments were made. Like, you have to go into some detail then if you're bringing up such a subject like that. I don't know if your television broadcast is necessarily the place for that.
Because it is a big story.
Look at the discussion we've just had, Wei, and we've spent 10 minutes on it. I mean, we're asking.
But that doesn't necessarily excuse them not getting to it. And again, I don't know what the right answer is, you know, but it because it's such a big story, because we are spending 10 minutes on it, for it to have zero representation on the actual broadcast, I just wonder if there's a, you know,
I mean, you got a public right statement decision out of them. Like, I mean, it's not like Tony Khan just said Brian Kendrick's off.
Public statement on Twitter.
Reasoning. That's a public statement, Wade. Like, I mean, you could go on. I don't want them to just say, well, Brian Kendrick is off for some insensitive comments, and that's all we say about it. It's mm-hmm. like you either go into it, and I think you have to have like an actual discussion about what these comments were. We as a company, like if they had chosen to, fine. But I was not looking at like the company running away from this story. If they had just gone ahead with Brian Kendrick and made no acknowledgement and just ignored this story today, that would have been running from the story. I think they did the opposite of that tonight. I don't think there are too many companies that in this situation would have pulled someone from a featured match because of something online.
Hmm.
So Moxley and Yuta, we had Orange Cassidy and Danhausen in the corners, and this was a rematch from October. This was the match where Moxley beat Yuta in 47 seconds last October, so they went much longer this time with Wheeler Yuta putting up much more of a fight. Moxley executed a pile driver. He raked the back of his back with his nails. That's a we're going back several decades for the back rake spot here.
It's a common spot of people like El Fantasmo.
That's right. Yes, I guess he is bringing an ode to the spot. Yuta would fire back with a drop kick, climbs, and Moxley rolls out. They're fighting on the edge, and Danhausen distracts, allowing Yuta to hit a dive onto Moxley. In the ring, Moxley catches him with a cutter, which it's a brand new week of cutters. This is starting things off, I guess.
It's got to be its own category at the end of the year, you know, best cutter?
Of
the year. Yeah.
Okay. The paradigm shift gets countered, angle slam by Yuta, and then a splash off the top for two, wheelbarrow into a choke, and Moxley drops his elbows into the paradigm shift, and 7 minutes, 29 seconds, Moxley gets the win.
I thought it was a good match. You know, Mox's intensity continues to shine upon his return here. I thought Wheeler Yuta looked really good. Yes, he was doing the job again, but this time he got a whole lot more offense and time than usual. You know, in the main event scene, I suppose Yuta really is just sort of an undercard jobber, but perhaps they're going to use this series of losses to Moxley to do some sort of long-term build like they have with Sammy Guevara and Cody Rhodes.
After Danielson appears in the ring and asks the crowd if they want to see them fight, and everyone's chanting yes, he says he wanted to see them fight for a long time too, because Moxley was different and wanted to see what he had and test himself. But this is a new John Moxley. He says that he was watching when Moxley was AEW champion and that Moxley was the best AEW champion. So what a dig at the other champions, including Hangman.
And potentially building new feuds.
Yes. He says that if you had some support, you could still be champion. And he has realized that the two of them should not be fighting. We should be fighting together. The crowd got into this. He said there is no reason why some millennial cowboy should be champion. There's no reason why someone dressed as a dinosaur should be a champion. And there's no reason why someone whose biggest contribution to society is creating a vlog that person should be a champion. We can run this place, have any belts we want, and maybe we take a Wheeler Yuta or a Daniel Garcia or a Lee Moriarty under our wing. We will train the future of pro wrestling together. Think of the greatness we can create and the legacy that you want to leave behind. And he leaves Moxley to think about this offer.
I love this. I thought Brian was fantastic. You know, this was a little bit surprising for me because in all of Brian's big AEW feuds so far, he hasn't necessarily done much talking to build up his feuds. You know, he usually just comes out and challenges guys to a fight, and then kind of tends to do his storytelling inside the ring. Here, he kind of starts off exactly how we were expecting him to. He just comes out, simply asks the crowd, do you want to see us fight? And the answer, of course, from the crowd was yes. And I thought that was it, end of the build. You know, we're going to get Moxley versus Bryan next week or you know, at some show. But then he swerves us and he suggests to team up instead. And I think it led to a long speech from Brian to try to get Moxley to team up with him and further prolongs this story before inevitably we are going to get the match. But now they're kind of serving us and taking us into a different direction. And I thought Brian was fantastic here. He had a lot to tell by himself, And he came across like Palpatine talking to Anakin, trying to get Mox to turn to the dark side here. His logic was really sound. I love how the specific intent was made to bring up the other members of the roster, you know, dissing and starting potential feuds with guys like Paige, Jurassic Express, and Sammy Guevara. But most importantly, like putting over talents like Wheeler Yuta, Lee Moriarty, and Daniel Garcia. Those three names coming specifically out of the level of star power that was in the ring between Mox and Bryan, I think does a whole lot to get positive attention on those guys, especially people like Moriarty and Yuta who don't necessarily have like the highest rankings, you know, in AEW so far. So again, we're undoubtedly getting Mox versus Bryan, but we're getting a deeper story before we get to the match itself. We're going to take our time to get there. And I think the payoff will be that much better.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of interesting ways to go here. I don't imagine that Moxley takes him up on this offer, but I can totally see Danielson kind of putting his little crew together. And maybe you either have Moxley as like this lone wolf, or potentially like Moxley gets some guys that are more in his mold than are in Danielson's mold as the three were that he named. But I really like this, especially if they end up going with this with Danielson with like his little like soldiers that he recruits.
Yeah, or he could pair up with Jurassic Express and do the my Dungeons and Dragons gimmick I proposed in that Survivor Series game.
All this time later, yeah, that is also a possibility on the table. But I think that like this gives them the kind of the runway to extend this and probably get to Danielson and Moxley at the pay-per-view, I would say.
Perhaps, yeah. I mean, we'll see whether or not they actually go ahead with this sort of faction idea. And that sounds wonderful. Like anything with those names that Bryan suggested going up against perhaps, you know, a Jurassic Express or something. It sounds great. We don't know if they're actually going to go that route or if this is simply words, you know, to just directly lead to Bryan versus Mox match. But either way, I'm interested in the story.
Well, we followed that with another in-ring talking segment. Brandi Rhodes is here in Chicago, and she loves being here. Everyone is so nice here in Cleveland. Boo! That's not where we're from. We're from Chicago. You don't even know where you are. And they are so upset at Brandi. And then she gets interrupted.
Was this the first clear heel direction we've had out of Brandi since her return?
Oh, God, I don't know. She's been a heel in different capacities. What was she
since she's come back from pregnancy?
Oh, from back from pregnancy. Well, she's had the segments with Dan Lambert before, but not
and
where.
She was,
yeah, she was much more a baby face the last time. This was just they were just trying to out heel one another. So Lambert comes out with the Men of the Year and says that it's bad for business when you start believing your own bullshit. Brandi doesn't need a reality show. She needs a reality check. And says, you can't pretend that Cody actually earned his spot or that the chief branding officer is a real title here in AEW. You pretend to be Brandi from the block when you get mad. And that's as fake as those fake bulldogs coming out of your shirt. And Lambert says that, what does it say when you're getting booed against me? A rich, angry, conservative, sexist, AEW-hating egomaniac. The crowd cheers us. Like, yeah, these are the characteristics we're cheering. He says, I'm almost a decent human being next to you, Brandi. So Brandi responds by addressing Ethan Page and saying the only reason we hired you was to get to Josh Alexander. It's like, mm-hmm. That's some terrible, like, strategy. You signed this guy for like a year. You're no further ahead. Josh Alexander hasn't been on this show once. Wouldn't you want to just wait out his deal? What's Ethan Page representing? Like the bridge to this guy?
He's
got a phone number. I think Josh Alexander will take a call.
It's terrible strategy, but I mean, really, it was just more of a dig, right?
Yeah. Well, joke's on her. You paid me a year so far. I'm doing great. Then says that she's been doing her homework on ATT. They're a five-time Gym of the Year, and you're doing great, Dan. The crowd starts chanting, shut the fuck up, at Brandi, and she just eggs them on. Are you done yet? and then brings up that your best fighter just got knocked out by Jake Paul. And that's when I was waiting for Lambert to say, actually, Tyron Woodley was at the St. Louis satellite group of ATT and really has nothing to do with our Coconut Creek main facility. But he did not say that. Yeah. I mean, Brandy then brings up Amanda Nunes, but says, oh, that's too soon. I think this one flew over probably half the audience's head that are not following MMA in any serious regard. But says that Dan should maybe focus more on American Top Tits.
American Top Tits. Yeah, that was pretty weak. Like, what is the logic there? I mean, I think Brandy usually has some pretty good lines, but what is the logic in American Top Tits? Like, how is that insulting?
Yeah, like, was she trying to make it seem like it's just all women at American Top Team? Like, that's, I don't know.
And how would that be an insult? And secondly, like, how did she arrive at that word in place of team?
Maybe she just meant it in an overall term, like tit as just an insult and not gender specific.
It was a weird selection. Weird choice.
Yeah. I think everyone knows what I thought of this segment. Dan asks that maybe it's time for your whole family to turn heel. The only face turn that people will buy is the one from your old job, which was being turned face down. So Brandy slaps him. Lambert thought that she was going to be willing to fight, and he has more things to do before he goes down in a blaze of glory getting canceled. And he brings out the returning Paige Van Zandt, who goes after Brandy. The audience doesn't know who to back here. And then the locker room empties to separate the two women. So we are going in the direction of Brandy and Paige, unless the idea that had been thrown out, I think by one of our listeners, maybe even you, Wei, about doing the mixed tag idea where it could be Paige and Austin Vanderford against Cody and Brandy down the road.
Yeah, that would make sense. Hey, first of all, before we even move there, do you know the status of Josh Alexander in Impact? Because I believe the contract is up in February. Like,
I don't know off the top of my head. I'd have to look it up. I don't know.
So, I mean, is there anything to this comment? More than just
usually when you hear a name like that, you would think like there's a purpose for doing it. I also don't think like if they had an idea for Josh Alexander that I think Impact would be willing to do something, but I don't know his deal status.
They do have the relationship as well, so even if he does like stay with Impact, like you know, he could potentially come in for something. But
I hope the line was for a purpose beyond just like some zinger that, oh, the guy we really want is with Impact. It was, I don't know. I took it as a throwaway line, but you know, if it has a purpose, then great. Then there was a reason for it.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, this segment. I mean, definitely mixed reaction, if not more negative, I would say.
Did you see positivity to this? Like, I wasn't scanning Twitter for this.
I wasn't scanning it so much either. But I mean, I think it was mixed reaction.
I don't know if it was all that mixed.
Well, I mean, I thought it was a positive reaction for Dan Lambert coming out. You know, he felt like the biggest babyface in the city coming up against Brandy Rhodes.
Is that what you want?
I'm not sure. Like, what was the purpose of designing the segment? I mean, yes, Brandy does.
No way. I thought it was taking two, like, heels and just trying to, like, who would be the bigger heel, and it turned out it was Brandy.
So, Dan Lambert is working a feud against Cody Rhodes, but that's Cody Rhodes, who is in a weird gray area where I think he's supposed to be a babyface, but not necessarily heel, or heel, but not necessarily babyface, so, depending on the week, depending on the hour. Brandy, though, clearly was being a heel throughout the entire segment. So I don't know. Like, again, like the kind of blurred lines are coming, you know, spreading towards Brandy now. I'm not exactly sure what the intent was, but I think there's only one clear direction here, and that it's that these Rhodeses are not going to be effective baby faces. And you can't expect a positive reaction, I think, in most towns, certainly not a town like Chicago.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not into this where it just seems like we are going to just like throw stuff and man, we're just thinking at such a deep level at what kind of pro wrestling we're presenting. I will say this. It's not like this crowd like dumped on this. Like it was a heated segment. This was a fantastic crowd all night long. And this segment was not an exception. So it's not like the crowd was bored by this by any stretch. I just question like the positioning of like these two sides of Dan Lambert and Brandy. And if the audience is really clamoring for Paige VanZant and Brandi Rhodes, I guess we'll see. Also, Austin Vanderford is actually fighting in a couple of weeks. So, I mean, he's deep into training right now for his fight with Gegard Mousasi. But after that, I think you would take away from this, like, the potential, like, maybe you do the women's match and further down the road, you could do like the mixed tag idea.
Okay. So let's take, for instance, they go Paige VanZant versus Brandi Rhodes, or Paige VanZant and, let's say, okay, Ethan Page versus Brandi Rhodes and Cody. Who's the card going to cheer for in that instance?
I think it's going to be American Top Team. Yeah.
Or just, you know, like a bit more of a tepid kind of, I mean, if it's Dan Lambert, I think Dan Lambert is a very easy babyface to turn because he's the entertaining type of heel that you appreciate, even though, you know, you're supposed to boo him. He entertains you. I don't know if the audience will have that same appreciation for Paige VanZant, but I think they also hate these Rhodeses.
It also could be a very tough match if you were to do Paige VanZant versus Brandi Rhodes.
The singles match, yeah, that'd be hard.
And that could be a case where the crowd just turns on the match if it were to fall apart.
Yeah, we'll see.
So this is an ambitious
program. I don't think they would book that singles match. Like, I think it would be a mixed tag or something.
Well, if you're doing the mixed tag, I mean, you know, for the betterment of the match, then you could argue Ethan Page makes more sense to be in that match than Austin Vanderford.
You'd at least need somebody. Yeah.
After that segment, we go to the Hardy family office in their...
No, the Andrade Hardy family office.
Sorry, everyone. The Andrade Hardy family office in their official stairwell. Matt is disappointed in Private Party losing on Rampage. So now Sammy Guevara has an open challenge for the TNT title, and he has nominated Isaiah Cassidy to go win the TNT title on Friday. Andrade walks in and asks why Private Party lost. And Matt wants to know, why isn't Darby Allin with us yet? And he explained that money talks. So we've got a lot of failure mixed throughout this faction. They can't get anything done. They can't sign Darby. They can't win titles. And that will probably continue on Friday.
Yeah, it kind of remains to be seen why exactly they paired Andrade with the Hardy family office. I mean, Andrade's still off doing his own thing with, you know, stinging the little kid, trying to buy the little kid. And really has nothing at all to do with, you know, Private Parties or Matt Hardy. Like, Matt Hardy's still operating the HFO as if it was still the HFO. So I'm assuming it's just a way to, get, like, you know, have Andrade get some people to run in for him without having to pay.
So Matt is now the minority owner, but he has more seats on the board, correct?
I think so, yeah. Sure.
So look at that. We might have a showdown.
I suppose so. Yeah, whatever it means. I will say, though, I was wondering if the HFO would drag Andrade down. That wasn't the case here. I actually felt like Andrade helped improve the segment. You know, that man is so entertaining that, like, him just kind of coming in doing his whole thing. Like, I don't know what Darby's issue is. Maybe he needs more money. Maybe I need to talk to Dad. Like, that already made this more entertaining.
Well, I can't say I thought about this for a second after this segment ended. Malachi Black and Brody King against Pac and Penta El-Zero-M. Pac starts the match, and he's got the blindfold on. And he stands in front of Malachi Black, and they start the match with him doing spots with the blindfold on, and I thought this was the coolest thing.
I thought it looked really cool upon entrance, like him being led out by Abrahantes. Mm-hmm. I thought it looked cool. But I was ultimately a bit let down because it felt like he was going to do the whole match blindfolded. Like, it felt like, and I don't know how he was going to do it, but that's what he kind of led us to believe. And then he just took the blindfold off.
Well, I mean, he's already revealed that he could see. So,
why do it all to begin with?
Maybe it would have been a little more impactful if they had actually, this was the reveal that he could now see. Although I would have built it up to something a lot bigger than just a tag match in the middle of a Dynamite episode.
Right.
But it's mind games way. That explains it. Dude, this crowd, they love Penta.
Yeah.
Love Penta.
Mm-hmm.
This was one of the strongest reactions he's had in a long time. He got the tag from Pac after the break, and they just go nuts. He's taking on both men. Some great striking involving Black and Pac. Sliding knees from Black. Man, these rhyming names, they're tough. Pac hits a release German, followed by a brainbuster. Penta with a step-up dive to the floor, taking out Brody King. and then they're double teaming Black. Pack gets shoved off the top by King as Black stops the Fear Factor, blows mist into the face of Penta, and sends him up into Dante's Inferno, and Penta takes the fall from Brody King at 10 minutes and 23 seconds. But is Penta now blind?
Yes.
He's got him and Julia Hart and Pack. They've all come down with this black mist of doom.
Is it? Yeah. Well, is the blindness permanent?
Well, not for Pack, but Julia Hart, at least in one eye, yes.
I guess it depends how deep you get it into
the
cornea.
Yeah, it's that dispersal of the mist.
Well, he's got Penta has a mask on, so maybe hopefully most of it got in, it was on the mask. Good match, definitely. Good match. I wondered, like, you know, I thought this there's a possibility this would even be in one of the main event slots if they had started the show off with MJF and Punk. But really good. I thought as a way to start the feud and introduce Pac, it was very good. But I do have some concern about, like, I think who they're actually focusing on in this story, because of the four men here, they gave Penta the least story, the least TV time. He took the pinfall here. He took the mist. Yet he was by far the most over guy in the entire match. And you know, it could be a Chicago specific thing, but I'm thinking it's more likely not. And I think what they're doing with Pac is really good, but he doesn't really feel like he's included Penta yet in the story. You know, it just kind of feels like he's here by association. All the storytelling has been Pac and Malachi Black. So I would love to see Penta just be a bit more involved in the storytelling itself.
Well, hindsight is 20/20, but his vision isn't after this match. So now he has a connection based on his blindness.
All right. Okay.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Adam Cole booked Brandon Cutler for an on-cam. He announces into the camera that is being shot by Brandon Cutler for us to view on TBS.
It's so unnecessary. For like every time we have Adam Cole.
I've never minded it as much as you do, but now that you've made such a thing about it, it's much more noticeable to me now that it happens quite a bit.
Brandon, turn it on. Brandon, roll.
I mean, it's just Brandon. It's their thing. It's their thing. They're not going to just randomly have. I mean, they're going to
why
explain.
Call, why now, call attention to it?
You because know, like, now I'm not if even they don't, about it. Now if they don't, it's like it's a slip up. It's a mistake.
Trust me, I don't think anyone would complain. I think they overthink it. Definitely.
You're definitely underestimating wrestling fans and their attention to detail.
Oh, who's shooting the camera?
Who shot that?
You honestly. Like, you honestly think that people would say, okay, whatever.
This is the kind of thing where it's like, if we just throw to the back and Adam Cole is looking right into a camera, no one is questioning this.
Of course not.
I think what Tony Khan's bigger thing is when, you know, there's some despicable act happening and there's no explanation for why a camera is shooting this and there's like a crime being committed.
Agreed.
And then I think that's kind of the middle ground you could meet where it's not insulting you. Whereas the guy is looking into the camera. We are not, we are acknowledging the viewer at home with this camera.
Yes.
And that is what the camera is there for.
Well, I mean, anytime we cut to a video package and it's a wrestler cutting a promo directly to the camera as they're crossing it over with B-roll or whatever, nobody questions who shot that. And this was exactly the same thing. It was simply Adam Cole talking to the audience at home. I don't think you have to preface every single one with Brandon, make sure you're rolling Brandon. Like, you know, what, like just it, too much.
So he says that he is still undefeated, and his record reflects that. Cassidy did not beat him last week. It was a fluke, and my record says so. And I'm one of the best in the world. You're going to see a new Adam Cole, and I'm going to hurt Evil Uno on Friday and then tell the world what I want. So a brand new Adam Cole is coming. I wonder if they're going to cut his hair, and now he'll be a manager.
Oh, interesting.
No, that'd be a terrible idea.
For who?
New Adam Cole coming.
Was it for Keith Lee that they were rumoring? What was that?
That was, I think the name that was thrown out there.
And who just became a free agent.
Yeah, Keith Lee is free now.
Bring back the Bearcat. He could be the Bearcat handler.
Jesus. So Cole and Evil Uno on Friday, which is happening as we speak. Nyla Rose versus Ruby Soho, a rematch from the TBS title tournament. Lars Fredrickson was there in the front row for Ruby Soho. And again, the crowd, they were very much behind Ruby, chanting for her. They went through a break. They fought on the edge, and Ruby lifted up Nyla and just dumped her onto the apron. And Soho came down to the floor, and she's holding her lower back, and then pays attention to Vicky Guerrero, allowing Nyla to take her with a spinebuster on the floor. Beast bomb in the ring. It's countered with no future, and Vicky grabs Rose's foot to try and put it under the rope to break up the cover, and the referee catches her. Ruby then takes hold of Vicky, but Rose makes the save, pulls her into the ring, neck breaker. On the corner, Ruby goes for a top rope Frankensteiner. It's blocked. Then she avoids the beast bomb, and she goes again for the jumping no future kick, but totally misses and just lands on the mat, allowing Rose to hit a senton off the top, and follows with the beast bomb to pin Ruby in 10 minutes and 48 seconds.
I like the booking, it seems like they're moving Soho down and putting Nyla Rose back into title contention, perhaps putting her in a position to take on any number of the baby faces that I think could use her as an opponent right now. She's been really good lately, and I think if given the ball again, she'd do even better this time with the championship. But I thought overall the pace of the match was a little slow for this type of crowd and this type of show. It was the type of pace for the most part that I mean, you would get during the commercial breaks. And I felt like it kind of slowed the momentum of the show down a bit.
Yeah, I mean, the crowd kept this one to me like heated. The match, it was all right. And I guess with Nyla, in this, it's the beginning of the year. So, I mean, you get a win, you're pretty much a number one contender at the moment.
Well, look at Lance Archer. So how did that guy get a title shot?
Private Party, lots of them. So, you rack up a win, you're in good standing. The Gun Club are with Jungle Boy in the back, and they just make fun of him and beat the hell out of him and then throw him outside into the cold water on the floor before sending him into the snowbank. And then Cage and Luchasaurus show up way too late. Where were these guys? Jungle Boy just sent out into the snow.
I guess
he's gonna catch a cold.
Possibly. Yeah. You might slip. Ice.
The Gun Club, by the way, not dressed at all for winter. They just take off and run down the street. It's like, this is not a good plan on your part.
Dress warm. Moral of the story.
Yeah, that's it. Punk and MJF are preparing in the back, and then Tony Schiavone brings out Hangman Page, who notes it's been 81 days since he won the title and has defended it twice. And I don't give a shit if Lance Archer wants a Texas death match next week. I don't want to wait till next week. I want to have it tonight. He's just going off and on all these things, including the weather outside. He thinks his flight's going to get canceled tomorrow. Not an optimist, this Hangman Page. So Dan Lambert is back for Act 2 tonight, and he's joined by Jake Roberts. And Lambert says about Hangman should have stayed back in Cleveland where they were last week, because they're soft and canceled the Indians. All right. And then Jake takes over, and God bless. I don't know what he said.
Okay. So Lambert finished talking. Paige was about to retort.
And then he saw Jake was starting, and he just stopped so Jake could speak.
So don't know what happened here. It didn't seem like the type of thing that was meant to create an organic situation, because even what Jake said afterwards felt completely pointless. So I have no idea. Anyway,
what did he say? I could not make out what Jake was saying. Oh, it was something about fear.
Yeah, he's like, you know what I smell? I smell fear. So is it like he doesn't really get too many words in before Archer just cuts him off.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know what the... It just didn't feel as smooth as maybe they were intending. And I do continue to wonder what exactly Jake Roberts' role is, especially now that there's Dane Lambert, who, you know, arguably is a more effective mouthpiece for Lance Archer.
Yeah, I mean, Jake... If you're going to use him for speaking, it should probably be in like a backstage setting.
Brandon.
Yes. So Archer just storms in, attacks Archer, and choke slams him onto the steps. This is after a chair is used by Dan Lambert, and Paige catches Lambert, but then Archer comes back, nails him with the chair, and then hits him with the choke slam on the steps and finishes him with a blackout through the table as Lambert is counting to set up the Texas death match for next week. So lays out the champion. This is not a big match for next week. This is hardly at the level we had with Paige and Danielson on TV. Certainly not. But it's a title defense for Paige, and hopefully it's a good match next week. But I can't say it's people are counting down the hours till this match takes place next week.
No, I mean, it's an interesting choice, an opponent. I mean, for one thing, I understand why they did it, okay? They can't all be Brian Danielson. They can't all be Kenny Omega as opponents. You're going to have
a TV
to have,
program. It's,
you're going to need TV programs. Lance Archer is a big guy who can, you know, showcase Hangman Page in a good underdog babyface light. But I'm a little disappointed that we didn't maybe try to get more personal material in the little build that we had here. There wasn't much time to tell it, but the story, whatever they've been trying to use, hasn't necessarily been all that compelling in the past 2 weeks. And, you know, whatever happened here between Jake, just kind of confused things even a little bit more.
We go into the back and Chris Jericho. How did this make it air?
Who knows? Who was shooting this? I don't know. What do we do? Just got cameras running around everywhere now? What kind of unrealistic setting is this? I can't suspend my disbelief to think a guy would talk to a camera, have it broadcast on TV like this. How'd he get the tape into the truck?
Did he buy commercial time?
Yeah.
Chris Jericho addresses Santana and Ortiz and calls it disrespectful what they did last week, not tagging him in on Rampage. Says how, if this is all about Eddie Kingston and how they got into the industry with him, well, we got into AEW together, and says that I'm a bigger influence than Kingston. I'm a bigger influencer than Kylie Jenner on Instagram. So next week on Dynamite, I'm calling a full Inner Circle team meeting, and you all better show up because attendance is mandatory.
Okay.
The team meeting.
Team meeting, yeah. I mean, this story hasn't really I haven't been crazy about it, you know, considering the amount of talent that's involved between Chris Jericho and Proud and Powerful and Eddie Kingston. I don't know if the promos have been all that great, or nor has, in my opinion, the story been laid out all that effectively. But you know,
well, it's also been hampered by Kingston getting hurt, so I think they're kind of just holding up certain things while Kingston recovers at the moment.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's true. That's very true. So hopefully next week you put that amount of talent in the ring in a speaking capacity. I have high expectations.
It's been a while that they've had the whole group together for a segment together.
And I would assume Eddie Kingston, right? Don't you think?
It would make sense that he crashes the meeting next week. I would think like that's, and where Santana and Ortiz go, if they're going to like kind of depart the Inner Circle and where things go with that. So Rampage on Friday will feature Adam Cole and Evil Uno, Thunder Rosa against Mercedes Martinez, and then we have the FTW title match between Ricky Starks and Jay Lethal, and the TNT title match between Sammy Guevara and Isaiah Cassidy. And Dynamite next week, all they've announced, it's the Texas death match and the Inner Circle team meeting. So more match announcements to come for that. And then it's about 9:15 Eastern, and MJF walks out. So the rest of the show was dedicated to MJF and CM Punk. Were you surprised? Number one, you were thinking like maybe they wouldn't end the show with it, but given that they did, are you surprised that they dedicated so much time to this?
Am I surprised? I think no.
Were you expecting like a long match between them?
Yes, I was. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you know, we've seen AEW tend to lately, you know, put all their main events off the very top, especially when it comes to these big matches with the possibility of time running out. You know, this was a Dynamite where they had only announced four matches, and we saw all of them by 9:15 p.m. here. So definitely suggested that this was going to go the distance, you know, with 30 minutes and plenty of time left over, or that it was going to be some sort of draw. Like, it almost kind of guaranteed that, and it didn't. So they still left plenty of surprise. I thought it was really interesting that they did this, and I got especially excited in the middle of the match.
So the match begins, and you know, it's Punk pretty much for the first 5 minutes of this match just destroying this guy. And it gets stopped when MJF is sent into the corner and Punk misses, and he runs his shoulder into the post, and his left shoulder, he would sell this for the rest of the match. And MJF was terrific working over this arm, it all like tied together with all of his different submissions, his attacks on the arm, and sets up Salt of the Earth as well. So that was a really, really strong part in the early going here to set that up. Punk would eventually come back. They brawled through the crowd actually early on as MJF was trying to evade. There was a Pepsi twist from Punk, and this crowd way, it just grew and grew and grew. It was amazing to hear this crowd and how sustained they were for these final 45 minutes of the show.
Oh, completely. I mean, this is CM Punk in Chicago wrestling against, I would say, the highest caliber opponent he's had in one of the best builds that he's had in years. I mean, of course in years, but even considering his WWE run, I mean, I would certainly put this up against, you know, the Cena feud and anything else. So the recipe was there for one of the hottest crowds you've probably heard on Dynamite.
Yeah. So we have Punk is he gets, this is after the Pepsi twist, and MJF.
By the way, did you catch before that Bilal Muhammad getting the opportunity to chop MJF ringside?
They were on the floor and Punk held up MJF, and Bilal Muhammad just gave like the most unconventional chop and just swatted this guy, nailed him. Yeah. And MJF sold it huge as he like rolled back into the ring. That was a fun spot.
A Rufus sport fighter.
Yes. So behind the referee's back, MJF grabs a piece of his wrist tape and he starts choking Punk with it, but then uses his arm to conceal the tape. And Punk is trying to get Bryce's attention that he's being choked, but all the referee can see is the forearm that is covering the tape. And Punk goes down, and he is, this crowd is like seeing him go down, and then all of a sudden the bell rings and this place loses their minds, that they are just shocked that Punk has lost. And they leave just enough time for MJF to celebrate before Bryce finds the tape and informs Justin Roberts that the match will continue.
So let me just say, I thought this was the greatest thing. Okay. We should also mention that many people were pointing out that this was a reference to a spot in a Jimmy Ray versus CM Punk match during their ROH feud. So this was something that he had done before, a reference to that. You know, this was a very good dusty finish, but I was kind of disappointed when they restarted this match, because like, I thought it would have been such an incredibly ballsy and perfectly trollish MJF thing to do, to end one of the most hyped matches to take place on national TV in the man's hometown, and ending it with the most unexpected finish ever, an arm drop after a generic sleeper hold. I mean, this was not a generic sleeper hold. You did have a tape, but like, to me, like, that might be the most unexpected finish in wrestling, you know, the raising your arm three times and having it end that way. And then on top of that, having 27 minutes left in this show, like, you know, talk about like, you know, taking away people's expectations, you know, the timing of the show kind of led you to believe that this would go 30 minutes. So I thought it would have been incredibly ballsy to end it like completely short of that time. But you know, this was ultimately just a dusty finish.
So the match gets restarted, and then Punk fires up, and dude, the heat here is unbelievable. He drops 20 punches on MJF in the corner. He then just goes full Bret Hart here. Manhattan drop, the bounce off the middle rope into the clothesline, and then he goes for the sharpshooter. And he can't apply it because his left arm is still giving him problems, and he gets kicked to the floor. And Punk's selling was terrific here. Throughout the break, he's just getting beaten down. The Heat Seeker is stopped, but then Punk manages a springboard clothesline and follows with a tope suicida, and in the process, injures his knee. So now his shoulder is screwed up, and his knee is destroyed. And MJF applies, he goes for like a tequila sunrise, but instead of the usual application, like a single leg crab, he crosses the legs like a sharpshooter. So he's attacking both the shoulder and the knee with this one submission. I was loving this match at this point.
Mm-hmm. It's fantastic. A lot of thought was put into every single move, clearly.
Really clever stuff. Punk counters out of it. There's a bridge. Punk earlier got MJF on his shoulders. Just getting him on his shoulders, the crowd went insane. So he tries for another GTS, but the knee gives out. And MJF ends up ducking. It comes off the rope, and Punk ducks and hits a poison rana on MJF. And, dude, Punk, they showed the overhead replay. Punk's landing just sucked. It just looked terrible.
Yeah.
He just came right down on his head.
He hasn't done too many poison ranas in his career.
Not too many. And MJF, he's holding his neck in pain. So he goes after the knee. He hits the Made in Japan, which someone on Twitter, and forgive me, I didn't get their username, appropriately named Mid in Japan.
Mid in Japan. Okay. Wouldn't it be Mid in Long Island?
Well, he was going more so for the MID. So
I know.
I think you got to keep Japan in there, or else, Mid in Long Island, you're just kind of losing people at that point.
No, so, it's way better. What you suggested.
They run into the corner, and behind the ref's back, there's a low blow by MJF. He puts his feet on the rope. Ref catches him. They go through a third break. And during the break, I don't know if you caught this, but MJF goes for the sharpshooter on the post, but he can't get it with both legs, so he just settles for one. And then we come back for the final stretch. They're battling on the turnbuckle, and Punk puts the underhooks on and delivers the Pepsi plunge. Yeah. You have never seen a 35 to 49-year-old male crowd on Twitter lose their minds more than this Pepsi plunge.
Oh, he did the thing. He did his old move.
Jim Ross called it the Pepsi plunge. I haven't seen that in over a decade. This place, they went insane for this.
I loved it. It was not simply a move done for fan service, okay? They came up with a great way of logically working themselves into that position. And CM Punk, despite having his knee completely fucked up, saw that he was in perfect position to hit a devastating move from his old repertoire. And he did it. It was a perfect time to sacrifice your injured knee for an old spot.
There's a pair of tombstone reversals. He nails MJF with the roundhouse kick, and after several teases, hits a top rope elbow for this incredible near fall. MJF rolls to the floor, and we're deep into the match, and Wardlow comes out, and everyone wants to see what he's going to do. MJF is dead on the ground. Wardlow steps over MJF and gets right into Punk's face, and they're having a stare down, and Wardlow just stands to the side, pretty much giving MJF over to Punk. At least that's what you're left to believe. And they go into the ring, but Punk is still focusing on Wardlow, not fully believing that he is not up to something. And that allows MJF to grab the dynamite ring out of his trunks and clocks Punk behind the referee's back. And MJF pins CM Punk. They went 38 minutes and 9 seconds. So MJF is your winner, and he sits cross-legged in the ring and passes the ring back to Wardlow. This was outstanding.
We should state that, you know, they were very good with the handling of the ring and everything, like to the point where I certainly didn't notice until they played the replays. And I have to imagine a good chunk, if not most, of this crowd probably didn't necessarily see it themselves. So I thought they left the idea, at least, you know, before the replays, that we weren't exactly sure if it was Wardlow doing this intentionally nor or unintentionally. They left it pretty strong. And then that's all to say, like, they did a good job of actually hiding, you know, giving us a bit of a sleight of hand in handing the diamond ring. But this was a great match. It really was a fantastic match, you know, in a promotion where I think you have incredible athletes that could do crazy flips and dives. These two completely relied on great psychology and great storytelling. It's the type of match that I'm going to rewatch without taking notes, because I got the sense that every detail and move and facial expression probably had a lot of thought behind it. And I'm positive I missed a whole lot by you know, being on Twitter and going through the commercials and whatnot. So Punk selling was great. MJF's body part work was tremendous. And, you know, let's kind of step back and think about the context of this. This had to be a pretty emotionally charged match for MJF, because he was out there with his idol. You know, this is a guy who has legitimately a photo with him, his CM Punk, like hanging up in his room that he lined up, you know, at an autograph session again. Now he was wrestling him in front of his hometown. And of course, on top of that, you know, like having so much bullshit intention throughout the day come out about all of this Brian Kendrick stuff. I don't know how much it might have gotten to him, but I imagine it must have been a bit of a challenge to stay focused throughout the day with all that discourse. But man, did they deliver. The atmosphere was incredible. And, you know, I think a deflating finish ultimately, like, you don't know. I don't know if, like, a match like this you ever want to see end with some sort of weapon shot. But I think given the circumstance, it was probably one of the best finishes they could have come up with. Because number one, I think MJF had to win, even in Punk's hometown. You know, you're either on your way to building MJF towards a title match, or you need to build enough heat for Punk to want to get revenge in a rematch. And I think both of those things ultimately require MJF winning, and a heel doesn't win without shenanigans. It also reaffirms the MJF-Wardlow relationship and now explicitly tells the audience that Wardlow is not a man we can trust. They did a good job of making us feel sympathy for Wardlow in the weeks leading up to this by making us feel like him winning cool squash matches with power bombs and, you know, looking disapprovingly at Sean Spears. All of that was done really well to make us side with him. But now we all realize we've been duped. Everything was just for show to lead to this one moment. And I thought they did a very good job manipulating us and, I guess, further cementing, you know, Wardlow as a heel now. So, you know, even though the finish might take away or diminish maybe the star rating of a match like this, I thought it was a good finish for the story that they're telling. Not as good maybe as, you know, the sleeper in the middle of the match, like I thought they were going to do, but still a good finish nonetheless.
This finish didn't diminish it at all for me. I thought it really was. I thought it was so much more impactful having MJF win this match. The match to me was, I mean, might have been the best performance of MJF, and that's a lofty standard when you actually isolate a lot of his big matches that he has had, in particular over the last 18 months. This was just sensational match. Certainly, I would say, you know, what had been the best Punk match since his return before tonight? This would be my number one. I thought the Darby match was really good. I certainly put this ahead of the Darby match.
Well, actually, funny, like, I think I'm still a bit more partial to the MJF Darby match, you know, if we're talking great MJF matches. But I mean, it just kind of tells you, like, both of them had really strong performances with Darby Allin, and all of those performances were really good. So if you felt like this was both men's best performances in AEW, I would not disagree at all, or argue with you. I mean,
what do you think is the optimal way you go here? That you
so
right back to the rematch at the pay-per-view, or do they take a detour? Because you could do MJF going for the title, and this loss kind of hangs on Punk, and this is something you wait to do the rematch for.
Yeah, certainly. Yeah, you can go to the rematch, but I mean, I think you're faced with the same problem even in a rematch, because I think MJF has to win the rematch too. You're not going to end this MJF run without him challenging for the championship. You know, you're not going to suddenly have Punk beat MJF and then somehow rebuild your way up to an MJF title match. I guess you could. You could really do anything.
Because you have enough from that last match with Wardlow. You could do Punk and Wardlow again.
Yeah, absolutely. And this time it would be hotter. So maybe you do Punk and Wardlow at Revolution. Maybe you have MJF actually challenge for the championship because he's in perfect position for it.
Yeah. So Fantastic main event. And man, that crowd was amazing for that main event. I mean, I'm so happy
for Chicago finally getting a good wrestling show in their city to get excited about.
This will hold them off for 6 weeks. So that's good. But there you go. A strong episode of Dynamite. Should we get into some feedback?
Let's do it. You want me to start, John?
Yes.
We got a Johnny Sanchez who says this episode felt off this week. The first three matches were great, but it felt more heavy on backstage segments and a lot of Lambert. I like Lambert, but you see how important who is opposite of him. Against Hangman, it provided a way for the babyface to shine, but against Brandy, it fell flat and seems like the face-heel dynamic was switched. Okay, now onto the main event. The build of this match felt like a big fight feel, and after last week's attack, it felt more personal. But overall, this match seemed like a match from a house show. I'm sure the fans...
That's a hell of a house show.
I'm sure the fans in the building must have had a fun time, but the tone felt off from the weeks of build. Also, why now is lifting of the arm a thing when nearly all the time we see the ref immediately call for the bell when a submission is locked in and the eyes are glossed over? The fake finish then restart didn't work for me, since MJF did the same thing with Jericho. The last 15 minutes was the type of match I wanted. I'm not sure why this match needed 40 minutes. Overall, I was excited for the match, but I just felt a bit disappointed. I'll be live at AEW next week. I hope it's better than this week's.
Wow. What I find amazing, though, is that he said the first three matches tonight were great, but it was the main event that was such a letdown.
Well, it was a different type of match. It was a slower type of match than maybe what you might have expected for a AEW main event, because we're so used to, like, you know, Young Buck style, you know, bang, bang, bang. But, like, clearly these two are going to go long. They have to go 40 minutes. So, of course, the pace is going to slow down.
I would have a lot of ways to describe this match, but, like, slow would not be...
Slow? Okay, so slow might not be the right word, but it was not a Lucha Brothers versus Young Buck style of match. It was much more psychology-based. It was much more body part-based, you know? And maybe... I'm just speculating about what Johnny might have felt was off about it, because I'm with you, and I'm probably most people in saying that this was an absolutely satisfying 4 minutes.
All right, let's continue with Noah. He says that main event was just perfect. I legitimately got out of my seat when Punk passed out. They completely got me on that one, and then was even more shocked when Punk didn't kick out at the end. So annoyed that Wardlow didn't do the right thing for once. Think we get the rematch at Revolution. We'll see. That's it's an option. I don't know how I feel about going back to it so quick versus the idea that this loss just looms over Punk, that he'll have to avenge, but do it. It's just, if you come back with this in 6 weeks, not even 6 weeks, more like 4 weeks in the pay-per-view. I don't know if you want to beat Punk again, nor do I think you want to just, you know, give his win back so quickly. Like, let this match be of great significance for Punk's character moving forward.
Yep, and the more I think about it, the more I think he should face Wardlow, because ultimately the potentially the biggest winner coming out of this could be Wardlow, putting the focus entirely on him, you know, making it feel like, and let's remember the last time Wardlow fought CM Punk. I mean, Wardlow had him beat for most of the match.
Took like 95% of it, yeah.
So they can continue telling that story by really pushing Wardlow, not just as maybe a favorite, but also as somebody who CM Punk has a personal grudge against now. So Wardlow stands to gain the most from a pay-per-view match with CM Punk, and hopefully he can cut some promos and build a bit more character as well. So I think I like that idea a whole lot more than even an MJF Punk rematch that soon. We got a Brian from New Jersey who says, I thought this was a terrific main event while still leaving the option open for a pay-per-view rematch a month from now. I was thinking it would be a lot more screwy, especially given how early it started, so it exceeded my expectations in that regard. Jim Ross was a little too heavy with the whose side is he on shtick with Wardlow. I can only imagine the conversation Punk and MJ have had in confidence as they laid their match in the pinning position. Like towards the end of the match after the pinfall, it felt like, you know, like MJF like was like they're having a full on conversation in the middle of the ring. What felt like a very emotional, like, you know, big moment for MJF in his career, maybe for Punk in his career as well. So that was interesting. He also says, pleasantly surprised by AEW not only pulling Brian Kendrick from the show when they did, but giving his spot to the underrated Wheeler Yuta. The Moxley Danielson angle took me by surprise, and I genuinely want to see that scenario from Danielson really happen.
All right. Andrew from Cape Breton. As a fan of Brian Kendrick, the past 24 hours have been a roller coaster. I was busy last night, so by the time I got on Twitter, I saw the match announcement with Moxley and Kendrick and thought it was fake. In regards to the stuff he said in the past, I know about some of the goofy stuff. Okay. I didn't know about the really horrible stuff, and I'm glad Tony made the call to take him off the show. Kendrick in the past has addressed briefly some of the stuff he said on a Lillian Garcia podcast, but didn't outright apologize. Just said he had to get rid of stuff from the past. I did think Wheeler Yuta was a great replacement, though, mostly due to the post-match angle with Brian. I liked AEW finally beating a top guy in their hometown, and this should get actual heat instead of the groans WWE gets for beating a guy in their hometown.
Okay, we get Kate from Montreal who says, all of the in-ring tonight seemed good to me, peaking, of course, with the main event. After the false finish, I was left unsure as to what was going to happen, which made it more exciting. I love the tease of Danielson and Mox's stable, or just at Bryan Danielson's stable, and I'm very curious to see where it goes. However, all of the other spoken segments ranged from flat to dire. If AEW wants to attract more female viewers, they need to drastically reduce the Lambert quotient on their shows.
Okay, we go next to Muggin, who writes, good of AEW to give Wheeler Yuta a prime spot against Jon Moxley. The post-match angle with Danielson forming a group with young talent like Moriarty and Garcia sounds intriguing. The Brandy Lambert segment died an ugly death. Death Triangle versus Kings of the Black Throne was a good start to get Black and King off and running. I looked at the time, it was 9:15, and my gut told me that Punk and MJF are going to go long with the main event, and they made every minute count. The first false finish was smart, and I was wide-eyed when Punk hit the Pepsi plunge. The finish begs for another match between these two, and Wardlow is once again the center of attention because of his assist.
Finally, we got an MJ from NJ who says, on Kendrick, for me, the news is that this company did something or wasn't afraid to do something that others would likely not do to close a show. And one company
to a show.
That close to a show, yes. And one company didn't do over the course of several years. You hate to see any attention given to such nonsense, but to the degree it has to be covered, the accountability is everything. Personally, who am I to say whether the accountability should extend beyond and prevent somebody from working in wrestling? Fair to say this was the biggest opportunity left in his career and he lost. And it will be hard for him to gain fans back as many will not easily dismiss him anyway. We are in a world where these old comments now resurface more commonly, not just in wrestling, and who knows what people really think or say in private anyway. Spread love and positivity, not hate and ignorance, right? Anyway, Brandy was doing her very best stuff tonight, and it was so cringe. I actually think that is the point. I am leaning more and more towards the Rhodes being healed by channeling their inner Hunter and Steph and overbooking themselves as stars of a show when the fans don't want them to be.
Yes. And yeah, there was a link that Andrew from Cape Breton included here, where I guess Brian Kendrick at least made some reference to this when he was on Lillian Garcia's podcast back in 2017.
Have you listened to it?
No, I have not heard it.
Yeah, we haven't listened to it. I haven't listened to it, so I can't really speak on it.
Right. All right, everyone, that's going to wrap up the show, but we are back on Thursday. We will be live at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, YouTube, Facebook, Twitter. You can watch us live on any of those platforms. We will go through all of the latest news, follow up from Dynamite, and looking ahead, because Thursday night is the WWE's earnings call. So we will be covering that on the site. And then Friday, Brandon Thurston will join us, will be joining me on the new show at 1 Eastern. And we will go through all of the key items from the earnings call. So that is it for us. And Wei, anything else to mention before we wrap up?
No, that's it. If you're going to have a lot of snow, then dress warm and, you know, stay safe on the roads.
There you go. That is it for us. Stay safe.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.